You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Steph, and this is Not Today. Hello, and welcome, or welcome back. Just as a reminder, there will be no episode next week because we will be celebrating Christmas with our families. There will be an episode the following week on the 30th, but then there won't be an episode the week after that because we'll be getting married and be on our honeymoon. Super chill, no big deal. So these next few weeks will be a little bit scattered, but on January 13th, we'll be back to our regular scheduled episodes. I also wanted to remind you that over on our Patreon, we released bonus episode number 46 last week about a really insane murder-for-hire case between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. So if you're interested in hearing that and so many other bonus episodes, or voting on stories you want to hear and more, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. You won't regret it. But today, I'm going to be talking about a topic I've been wanting to look into for a while now. It's a new kind of survivor story for us, but definitely one that fits the bill. I'm going to be diving into two wrongful convictions that led to the imprisonment of two innocent men for nearly 20 years. Before I get started, I wanted to give a massive trigger warning. This case is dark and does involve the kidnapping, sexual assault, and murder of a minor. I want to start this out by talking about the Innocence Project, because without them, these two men would probably still be in prison, or possibly dead. The Innocence Project was founded in 1992 by attorneys Barry C. Scheck and Peter J. Neufeld at the Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law in New York City to use DNA testing to exonerate the wrongfully convicted and reform the criminal justice system. In 2000, the Innocence Project received a letter from a man named Kennedy Brewer claiming his innocence. It read, quote, "Back in 1992, I was accused of killing a 3-year-old child, something I know I did not do. I've been on death row in Mississippi for 5 years, and I know they have the wrong person locked up." The Innocence Project gets sent thousands of letters annually from incarcerated men and women all over the country, with reports indicating around 2,400 letters from prisoners seeking help each year, and over 65,000 letters received in total since 1993. Many of the people seeking help have been in prison for 2 or even 3 decades at that point, and they're out of time, so they write to the Innocence Project, all claiming they were wrongfully convicted, and all with a story. As much as they wish they could do more, they can't take every case, and only take on about 1% of the cases that come their way. But Kennedy Brewer's letter stood out to them. He had been convicted almost entirely based on bite mark analysis, which is a very flawed methodology. Co-founder of the Innocence Project, Peter Neufeld, said, "The whole system is flawed. Over the years, they have become angry with how foul the criminal justice system is. The Innocence Project was made up of former public defenders who had seen so many things wrong with this system, and they wanted to make a difference. Because of unreliable forensic science methods, innocent people are going to prison. Neufeld said, quote, "It's the whole profession. It's the whole system. It's the whole methodology. It's all junk." So after reading Kennedy's letter, they were very interested in taking on his case, but they had no idea how big Kennedy's case would actually be. Kennedy Brewer's case doesn't actually even begin with him. It all started with the wrongful conviction of a different man for almost an identical crime in the same town in Noxubee County, Mississippi. The night of September 15, 1990 started out like any other. Sonia Smith had given all three of her children a bath and put them to sleep in her bed. Ashley, who was the oldest, was 5, Courtney was 3, and Petra was just a baby. The bed was pushed up against the wall by a window. Ashley and her sisters were always close because they shared the same room and the same bed. They all slept together. Sonia's mother was home, and her oldest brother was also home and asleep on the couch. So since there were adults there with the kids, she decided she could have the night out. She figured the kids would be safe there with them. So Sonia and her best friend went out drinking for the night. The next day, on September 16, 1990, Ashley remembered waking up and finding 3-year-old Courtney wasn't in bed with them. When Sonia got home the next morning, her mother asked her where Courtney was, if she was with her. And Sonia told her mother no, she thought Courtney was home with her. That was when they realized Courtney was missing, and the police were immediately called, and a search began. A group of people began sweeping the area, searching for her and calling her name, knocking on doors, doing anything they could to find this 3-year-old girl, but she was nowhere to be found.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When Ernest Eichelberger, the investigator for the case from Noxubee County, got to the Smiths' home, he saw it was really small, old, and a one-bedroom trailer. It wouldn't have been hard for someone to get into. The majority of the people in Noxubee County are low-income and predominantly Black. Local news reporter and pastor R.H. Brown said that he likes it when there's a tornado in Mississippi because they bring people together. If there's no tornado, quote, "there's a divided Mississippi still. There's a white Mississippi and there's a Black Mississippi. The racial divide in Mississippi is still very evident." And according to him, Mississippi still has a long way to go. Noxubee County also has a long, horrible history of racism there. Investigator Ernest Eichelberger is Black himself and had to sue the sheriff's department in Noxubee County just to get hired there. He said they wouldn't hire him because they claimed he was too short, but in reality, it was blatant discrimination. So that's the underlying atmosphere for this story, which is definitely relevant. Courtney Smith's disappearance was really big news in the area because they never had children go missing. And finally, Courtney Smith was found. September 17, 1990, Courtney's body was found in a pond less than 100 yards from her home. She was face down and partially clothed in the water. Forensic pathologist Stephen Hain worked with the state crime lab and was the go-to guy for the death cases in Mississippi. He found that she had been sexually assaulted and that some of the wounds on her body had been made from bite marks. Because of that, Hain recruited the help of Dr. Michael West, a forensic dentist, to look into the bite marks found on the body. Courtney Smith was the first child homicide case that Eichelberger had ever worked, and it was his first case working with bite marks, so he didn't know anything about them. It was a highly emotional case and one that he didn't know much about to begin with. Bite mark evidence was also new at the time. In theory, you can compare the impressions of bite marks on a victim to the teeth of a suspect, like a fingerprint. The argument is the arrangement of the human's teeth in the mouth is unique, and those unique features transfer to the skin. While Michael West was working on the bite analysis, Eichelberger rounded up everyone who had access to the house within the last 24 hours and processed them as suspects. He then presented that list of 12 people to Michael West, who took 12 sets of impressions of these suspects' teeth to compare to the bite marks found on the body. Unfortunately for the investigators, they weren't able to get any fingerprints at the house, so these bite marks were their best bet at the time. They weren't using DNA, so this was the evidence they had. There was also no physical evidence from the house. The only other thing they had was Ashley Smith, Courtney Smith's older sister, who at the time was 5 years old. She was the primary witness in the case. She said she wasn't all the way asleep when Courtney was taken out of the bed. At this point, she doesn't remember a lot of that night since she was so young, but she does remember, as part of the investigation, going to talk to Uncle Bunky. Uncle Bunky was the host of a TV show called Fun Time, a show he had been doing for 30 years. He would draw animals and entertain children. But in addition to this TV show, he also had a side gig with the Lunds County Sheriff's Department. He was Deputy Bunky Williams, the crime scene sketch artist, and would question children, which was perfect because they knew him as Uncle Bunky. So they already loved and trusted him. Ashley was interviewed by Eichelberger and Uncle Bunky, and these are all direct quotes from that interview. During the interview, Uncle Bunky said to Ashley, "You told me he had something in his ear. Do you remember what he looked like?" And Ashley told him, "He had a quarter in his ear." Uncle Bunky said, "Like the earrings there?" And Ashley said, "Yeah, an earring and a quarter." Keep in mind, this child is 5 years old. When Uncle Bunky asked for a name, Ashley told him Trevon. Eichelberger asked Sonia for a list of people who was around Courtney at the time, and specifically for anyone who had earrings. Sonia only knew of one person who had an earring, and his name was LaVon Brooks, which sounded similar to Trevon. LaVon was someone that Ashley would have seen around her mother because she and LaVon had an on-again, off-again relationship. They would hook up sometimes. But the way they came to the conclusion that she was talking about someone with an earring was because she said he had a quarter in his ear, and Uncle Bunky came up with the idea that she actually meant an earring. So who knows what she was actually referring to? But now they had a name. When LaVon Brooks was called to the jail for questioning, he was confused. He had heard about Courtney's murder, but he had nothing to do with it. And he had an alibi. He was at the club that Saturday night. He told investigators multiple people who were there with him could verify that. LaVon worked at the club as a bouncer. That was how he met Sonia, and how they began their fling, which wasn't serious at all, but they liked each other. And it was true, he was at the club. The issue was he left at 1:30, and the kidnapping could have taken place after the club was already closed. The other issue was Ashley had picked LaVon Brooks out of a lineup of pictures. But again, she would have known his face from her mother. And also, she was 5 years old. She wasn't the most reliable witness. For those reasons, LaVon Brooks ended up being their primary suspect, and from there, they focused in on him. And only him. Levon thought that by him coming to the jail on his own and being extremely cooperative and answering their questions, they would realize he was innocent and he'd be able to leave and go back to his job. But that wasn't the case. At that point, he was placed under arrest for the suspicion of the murder of Courtney Smith, and they took impressions of his teeth to compare to the marks on her body. After Michael West did an analysis of his teeth, he determined that LaVon Brooks was a really good match. And LaVon was very upset because he knew he hadn't done anything, so he didn't know how that could be. LaVon's family also knew he didn't do anything. It seemed like they had found someone to pin this on and they were only focused on him, like they were going to make this fit. LaVon was their guy. It was a very shocking and emotional case for everyone. Courtney Smith was 3 years old, and this was a brutal case. The community wanted someone to blame, so he was charged with capital murder. 16 months after Courtney Smith's death, LaVon's trial was about to begin and jury members were being selected, and a man named Boss Stevens was one of the jurors who was selected. He had known LaVon all his life. LaVon's family worked for Boss's family, I think literally picking cotton. But as a kid, they played together and ate at the same table, so they were friends. He thought for that reason they surely wouldn't select him to be in the jury. But he believed that the district attorney probably selected him because he was a white man, thinking he would be more likely to convict a black person, and the defense selected him because he had a history with LaVon and they thought he wouldn't convict his friend. LaVon was hopeful because he thought that Boss would give him a fair shake. The trial began on January 15, 1992, and this was a huge trial. Everyone was watching to find out if he was really the person who did this terrible thing. Forrest Allgood was the district attorney, and he felt good about their case. They had an eyewitness. They had the fact that LaVon knew the victim and was familiar with the house. And they had the bite marks. But the bite marks were the biggest thing. It really doesn't seem like much, considering their eyewitness is a 5-year-old, and him just knowing her isn't very compelling evidence to me. But Forrest Allgood was a very effective DA. And Boss Stevens compared him to a Southern preacher. He was very powerful when he spoke, and apparently very convincing. After that first day, even Boss thought, damn, maybe he did do it. The day Ashley was put on the stand, she was told to point out who she knew. And of course she pointed to LaVon because she knew him. He had been around their house. Which seems like a really unfair way to phrase it, but she pointed to him and it was very effective for the jury. Michael West was also put on the stand as an expert witness, and he was extremely convincing as well, claiming that based on the unique areas of his dentition, he could very confidently conclude that LaVon Brooks was the person who left those marks on Courtney's body. He went into great detail about specific parts of LaVon's teeth and how they made certain marks, and was very adamant about being right. It was obvious to the jury that West wanted them to believe that he had the smoking gun in this case. They also used a doll to demonstrate how Courtney would have held her arm in a defensive position when it was bitten, which again is shocking and evokes a certain response from the jury. After the prosecution rested its case, the defense moved for a mistrial on numerous grounds, including the fact that they didn't have access to Ashley before she testified, and in their opinion, Ashley, who was 5 at the time of the murder, was far too young to be a reliable witness. But their motion was denied. Sonia was called to testify for the defense. She said she didn't believe LaVon would do this, which isn't nothing. The mother of the child who was murdered was testifying for the defense. But the defense didn't have much other than that. They didn't have DNA because they weren't using it at the time, and LaVon didn't have money for a fancy lawyer, so he had a public defender. Not that there's anything wrong with public defenders, but they were up against all the resources of the state of Mississippi, and Forrest Allgood was very convincing. At that point, despite Boss Stevens knowing LaVon his whole life, he was convinced. He didn't want to believe he had done it, but the prosecution had made a convincing enough case. So the jury found LaVon Brooks guilty of capital murder. The judge asked LaVon if he wanted to say anything, and he stood and said, quote, "I know y'all convict me of capital murder, but I didn't do it." and he sat back down. Even worse, Levon had to sit through his family begging the judge to spare his life when it came to sentencing. In the end, he was sentenced to life in prison instead of the death penalty. He was sent to Mississippi State Penitentiary, Parchman Prison. Levon couldn't understand how he got there. He was living a nightmare, but he was trapped. After he was sent to prison, he didn't care if he lived or died. Parchman Prison was a really bad place to be. It had a history. It was established in 1901, and until 1972, inmates who did not work hard enough could be whipped. He was so angry about what had happened to him. He was wrongfully imprisoned, and now he had to live as a prisoner. His life wasn't his own. When he was told to hit the floor, he had to do it. When he was told to take a shower, he took a shower. When he was told to go to sleep, he went to sleep. He got 2 hours a week with his family when they were able to visit him. Levon's family and friends knew he had been a scapegoat, but there was nothing anyone could do. It was over. He had been sentenced to life in prison. In May of 1992, 4 months after Levon Brooks was sentenced to life in prison, 3-year-old Christina Jackson was reported missing. After 2 days of searching in Noxubee County, investigators had turned up no clues. Her mother, Gloria Jackson, and her mother's boyfriend, Kennedy Brewer, reported the child missing. Authorities said the house was locked from the inside, and Gloria said she and her boyfriend didn't know how Christina had gotten out since they were the only ones home. There was a window that had been broken out for a while, but they didn't know how she could have gotten out of the house or what had happened. Once again, a massive search was started for the child, and eventually Christine Jackson was found floating in a body of water nearby her home. She had also been sexually assaulted. The community of Noxubee had never heard of this happening before, and now it had happened twice in the span of a few months. It was then reported that Christine's body also had bite marks, which were identical to the ones in Levon Brooks' case. It begged the question, how could Levon Brooks have committed the first murder if an identical second one had taken place after he had already been locked up? When many people in the community found out about the details of the second case, they felt like that meant Levon couldn't have committed the first crime. However, investigators were claiming they hadn't gotten it wrong. They said this had to be a copycat. Medical examiner Dr. Stephen Hain, D.A. Forrest Allgood, and Dr. Michael West all believed it was a copycat.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year, and we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
Michael West's professional resume is 28 pages long. He attended the LSU School of Dentistry, took a class on forensic dentistry at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Washington, D.C. He then started going to the American Academy of Forensic Science. He has 29 years in death investigation, 15 years in a coroner's office, 5 years as coroner and chief medical examiner. He's investigated over 5,200 deaths, attended over 5,800 autopsies, and analyzed over 300 bite marks. He was a pioneer in the field of forensic odontology at the time. And his expertise in court went beyond dentistry. He studied crime scene analysis, crime scene reconstruction, gunshot residue analysis, bloodstain pattern analysis. He said looking at those patterns, you can reconstruct what happened at a crime scene. He has said bite marks are better than fingerprints because they not only show that you were present, they show that you were in a violent confrontation with that individual. He's also said, quote, all the talent, all gifts that I possess are directed straightly from God, and I feel that it is a good fight, and that is what I am here to do, to fight this battle, man's inhumanity to man. His body of work is impressive when you look at it on paper, but he has a bit of a God complex as well. There is absolutely no telling this man that he is wrong. And I'm going to get into more of the specifics of why bite mark analysis is controversial in a little bit, but he completely rejects that idea. And as I said earlier, he thinks bite marks are just as good, if not better, than fingerprints. So he's a little bit lost in the sauce, in my opinion. And also, just as a general vibe check, I am not a fan of his. But I'll talk more about that later. 2 days after the body was found, Gloria Jackson's boyfriend, Kennedy Brewer, became the number one suspect. They knew he was inside the house with Christine Jackson that night. Gloria was with Kennedy, but since nobody else was in the house with them and the door was locked, Forrest Allgood said it was difficult for him to understand how the child got out of that house without the assistance of Kennedy Brewer. And the day of the disappearance, the child's grandmother told police she believed Kennedy Brewer knew what happened to Christine that night. Like LaVon Brooks, Kennedy Brewer didn't have the money to get a lawyer, so Thomas Kessler was appointed to represent him. He was only a part-time public defender. He had a baby girl of his own at the time, so this was a difficult case for him to deal with. But Kennedy Brewer insisted he was innocent. He had heard that plenty of times before, so he didn't necessarily believe that. To him, Kennedy gave a pretty ludicrous explanation. He claimed someone crawled through a window and took Christine. But then, Kessler brought a plea agreement from the DA's office to Kennedy, which he turned down immediately. He wouldn't even entertain the idea of pleading guilty, which was when Thomas Kessler realized that he might really be dealing with an innocent man who had a chance to not only be convicted, but get the death penalty. Kennedy Brewer had never even had a traffic ticket before. He had always done what he was told. He knew police had this whole situation wrong. He hadn't done anything. But the Noxubee County Police didn't look any further than him in their investigation. They didn't question anyone other than him for the crime. He claimed anyone could have put two and two together that those crimes were similar, but they never did. After Dr. Michael West sat with Kennedy Brewer in a room and took impressions of his teeth, his fate was unfortunately sealed. After his analysis of Kennedy's teeth and the bite marks found on the body, he concluded that there were 19 human bite marks, and the language he used to express his opinion was something that Thomas Kessler had never heard a professional use. West wrote, quote, "The bite marks found on the body of Christine Jackson were indeed and without doubt inflicted by Kennedy Brewer." He said, "Indeed and without doubt, the bite marks were caused by Kennedy Brewer." It was a very bold statement to make. He even recorded a video holding up Kennedy Brewer's dental mold up to the bite marks on Christina Jackson's body and showed how the teeth would have had to have been oriented for him to have bitten her to create those marks. But he was freely holding this dental mold and twisting it to exactly fit the bite marks on the body. So he was basically making these teeth fit. But to him, this was indeed and without doubt a direct match. The state's main piece of evidence were these bite marks, so Thomas Kessler went to the court and told them that he needed a dental expert for the defense. and he ended up getting Dr. Richard Suveron from South Florida to look at the case. Dr. Suveron was also extremely famous in the field of forensic odontology because he was the expert who testified in the Ted Bundy case. He had taken the cast of Ted Bundy's teeth and used that evidence against Ted Bundy. It was the most famous bite mark case to date and brought bite mark analysis to the public view. For anyone who does not know, Ted Bundy's teeth were extremely distinct because they were very jagged and sharp and all messed up. So his bite marks were extremely big in the case because he bit his victims. So Dr. Richard Suveron became famous from that case. He also happened to be Michael West's idol in forensic odontology, which is kind of funny because he's testifying for the defense. According to Dr. Richard Suveron, Michael West was 110% wrong. He said none of those marks were bite marks. Because of the 19 bite marks found on the body, Michael West claimed only the upper teeth marked. But Dr. Suveron said there were no such thing as bite marks with only the upper teeth. Maybe it would happen one time, but definitely not 19. If you're biting someone, you're using your top and bottom teeth, your whole jaw, but he was claiming that it was just the top teeth, which doesn't make any sense. He also said it was ridiculous that he was claiming there was a bite mark on the foot. He said it was highly unlikely that someone would stick a person's foot in their mouth. When Michael West heard what Dr. Suveron had to say about his analysis, he said he was a, quote, witness having other reasonable explanations, or a WHORE. Very clever. Dr. Suveron also said he never uses a direct comparison of a suspect's teeth to a bite mark on the victim, because when you're placing the teeth directly on the body, you can literally make a bite mark, which was basically what Michael West did. He took the cast of the teeth and rolled them over the bite marks to fit exactly. Almost any person's teeth would have fit. So Dr. Suveron said that video was outrageous. Kennedy Brewer's trial began in March of 1995, nearly 3 years after he was arrested. The jury wasn't shown the video Michael West made because the judge believed it was too macabre, which Kennedy's attorney was actually upset about because he believed it made Michael West look like a quack. On March 20th, 1995, Dr. Michael West presented his findings to the jury, and unfortunately, he had a very big impact. He was very confident in what he said. The marks on the body were, without a doubt, bite marks created by Kennedy Brewer, and some of them were defensive wounds, which pulled on those heartstrings. Dr. Suveron also testified that day, and the jury was, unfortunately, unimpressed by him. He was too flippant about his explanation for the defense. Dr. West's testimony got a much bigger response. He seemed like he really knew what he was talking about. When the jury was in deliberations, they really only had that piece of evidence and a lack of any other suspect to take into consideration, and they had a decision to make, so the jury ultimately decided Kennedy Brewer was guilty. Not only did they find him guilty, but he was sentenced to death. Kennedy sat there, defeated, and Thomas Kessler was also very upset because he knew he was an innocent man. Kennedy was also sent to Mississippi State Penitentiary, Parchman Prison, where he was kept in solitary confinement on death row for the entirety of his time there. They had him on lockdown in a one-man, 6x9 cell, all by himself, the whole time. It wasn't until 5 years later, in 2000, that Kennedy would finally reach out to the Innocence Project to take a look at his case. By 2000, he was incarcerated for 8 years and was on death row for 5. In both cases, the evidence boiled down to the bite marks. That was all they had. But neither of them had bitten anyone or done anything. And neither of them had any money or resources and were going up against the power of the state of Mississippi. Kennedy had seen on the news that DNA evidence was being used in investigations, which was when he wrote to the Innocence Project to look into his case. He was hoping they could use DNA evidence to prove his innocence. Up until the late 1980s, DNA was only used for disease diagnostics. It was around 1987 that it began being transferred over to criminal justice. Barry Scheck said, quote, "We knew from the beginning that DNA was going to be a magic bullet that would show us all these old cases had resulted in wrongful convictions. DNA testing can confirm guilt, but it can also prove innocence." In his letter, Kennedy explained police had been able to collect a semen sample. The investigators in Mississippi didn't use DNA evidence in those days, so now the hope was the rape kit that was collected at the time could provide biology that could be tested with DNA to determine that Kennedy was not the source of the semen. They immediately got that testing process started, and when Christine Jackson's DNA testing results came back at the end of 2001, they excluded Kennedy as being the source of the semen. The report confirmed that Kennedy Brewer had not contributed to the DNA. Peter Neufeld called Kennedy Brewer's mother and told her Kennedy didn't do it. By 2001, he had been incarcerated for 9 years. They assumed that once the DNA evidence proved his innocence, his charges would be dismissed and Kennedy would go back to his family. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. Back in Noxubee, Mississippi, District Attorney Forrest Allgood didn't think the DNA evidence warranted dismissing the case. Just because it wasn't his semen didn't mean he didn't kill her. That just meant he didn't rape her. Allgood thought Brewer possibly knew more than he was letting on. He was stuck on the fact that the child had been locked inside the house, so how had she gotten out without the assistance of somebody already inside? He began accusing Kennedy Brewer of selling Christine Jackson for drugs, and he said if he contributed to her death, then in his mind he was still guilty of capital murder, even if he hadn't been the one who actually did it. But drugs hadn't even been a part of the case, so that seemed like an outrageous claim. It seemed like he was just making things up at that point. They long had the DNA evidence proving Kennedy didn't do it, and yet Forrest Allgood wouldn't let it go, and was even threatening to take it back to trial. And then in 2004, the Innocence Project learned that Forrest Allgood was definitely going to retry the case, which was when Vanessa Potkin and Peter Neufeld from the Innocence Project stepped in to represent Kennedy Brewer. They realized the key evidence against Kennedy was the bite marks, so they decided to investigate the case themselves. So they went to Mississippi, and they figured out the path the killer took and how easy it would have been for a stranger to get in through the window. They went to the house where Christine Jackson was abducted and took pictures of one of their investigators, named Mike, standing next to a window and reaching in and down, to show that any adult male could have very easily reached in and lifted Christine Jackson through the window and taken her off into the night. In order to debunk the bite mark testimony, they felt it was really important to explain to the jury what could have caused those marks. So they found an aquatic forensic entomologist to really understand what the animal activity in the creek was like. And this expert believed that crawfish could have caused the marks on Christine Jackson's body. He had a few traps, and he put them down a few feet in, and after a few days, they had about 24 crawfish. They then placed the crawfish in a tank with a stillborn pig, and the results were that the crawfish fed on the pig and left marks that were very similar to the marks seen on Christine Jackson's body. So the bite marks found on the bodies that were, indeed and without doubt, caused by LaVon Brooks and Kennedy Brewer, weren't even caused by humans. They were caused by crawfish. Their next order of business was figuring out if this was an isolated event. And they figured it wasn't. So they began looking at newspaper clippings all over the South to see if there were other similar crimes committed within this time frame. It didn't take them long to figure out that there was another crime that was almost identical to this one from the same town, meaning LaVon Brooks's case. When they started asking around to local people in the community, they immediately learned about the murder of Courtney Smith and LaVon Brooks, who was sent to prison for that crime. 32-year-old LaVon Brooks was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to life on January 20, 1992. Looking at these two crimes, they found that they happened only 18 months apart, only a couple miles away from each other, and they were almost identical. They were both abductions of 3-year-old girls in the middle of the night, both were sexually assaulted, murdered, and left in a body of water. Levon couldn't have done both of them because he was already in prison by the time Christine was killed, so they reached out to Levon. They told him they were looking into his case as a part of Kennedy's and asked him if he wanted them to work on his case as well. By that time, in 2006, Levon Brooks had already been incarcerated for 16 years. That was the last thing he was expecting to hear, so he was, of course, very happy to have the Innocence Project take on his case as well. He knew he was innocent, but it had been so long he had given up any hope that anything would happen. He had been making artwork in prison to pass the time, and he would read his Bible every day and every night because he had accepted his fate. He had no access to any legal representation, and there was no way for him to do anything about his wrongful conviction. He had accepted that this was his life now. Peter and Vanessa were hopeful that they would be able to also conduct a DNA test for Levon to prove his innocence. However, in his case, the way the rape kit had been stored, it was completely contaminated, and they got no DNA results. He was also convicted on bite marks, but one additional piece in Levon's case was the eyewitness. But the jury had never gotten to hear the audio tapes of those interviews. They only got to hear Ashley on the stand. During the interview with Uncle Bunky, Ashley was 5 years old and hadn't mentioned anything about the abduction of her sister. When she mentioned the quarter in the man's ear, she also said that the man put a quarter in her sister's ear, kind of like a magic trick. When Uncle Bunky asked if the man had anything on his face, like a mustache or whiskers, Ashley said he had a Halloween thing on his face. Uncle Bunky asked if it was a stocking or a Halloween thing, and Ashley said, stocking. So it seemed like she was repeating back what he was saying a little bit, taking things that he was saying and incorporating it in her answers. She was so young, and she watched Uncle Bunky on TV. She was also talking about things that couldn't have happened. At one point, she talked about the man escaping in an airplane, and how she got up and got a knife, and how the man said, na-na-na-na-na-na, I've got your sister. So, she was acting like a child because she was. She was playing pretend with Uncle Bunky, her beloved TV character, and repeating back the things that he was saying to her because she was having fun. She couldn't possibly grasp the gravity of the situation at that age. Ashley Smith, as an adult, looked back on the situation and said, quote, I don't think any 5-year-old should hold such position where somebody's life is at stake. Meaning, she doesn't believe she was a reliable witness. She couldn't be.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you know that over 80% of companies in America, each generating more than $100 million in revenue, don't show up on public stock exchanges? They're private and are largely not an option for 401k investors. But now there's a chance for everyday American savers to opt in for access through the 401k plan if they choose to. Regardless of how you're building for the future, you deserve the same opportunities. Because you've earned the right to more. Learn more by visiting retiresafer.org. Paid for by the Council for a Safe and Secure Retirement.
As Vanessa and Peter were working on Kennedy and Levon's cases, they talked to Eichelberger, who was the lead investigator for both cases. They asked him if he believed the crimes could have been committed by the same person, and his response was absolutely not. He was convinced that Levon Brooks committed the first crime, so he couldn't have committed the second one. So they started looking at what was missing. Who could have committed the crime, if not Levon? There were a number of early suspects. Among them was 35-year-old Justin Albert Johnson. He had already been convicted of one home invasion and sexual assault at the time Courtney was murdered, and then shortly after, he was arrested again, breaking into someone's home and attempting another sexual assault. Justin Johnson was very uncooperative at the time, but they still processed him. But they were so focused on the bite mark comparison on Levon, they just let Justin Johnson go free. The DA wanted to focus on Levon, so they just let Justin Johnson go. That was just a decision that was made, without any further questions or investigation or anything. In the summer of 2007, the court set a date for Kennedy's case to have a retrial. Now that they were getting ready for trial, Kennedy's lawyer sent all the evidence out for their own testing. They sent the evidence to Dr. Blake, who had a laboratory in Northern California. And when they sent him the evidence from the case, they didn't just send him the rape kit, they also sent him reference samples from the other suspects, which he tested as well. Dr. Blake called up Kennedy's lawyers and told them not only did he exclude Kennedy as a match, but he had a great match in one of the other samples they just sent him, Justin Albert Johnson. On February 4th, 2008, Justin Albert Johnson was brought in for a recorded interview. He admitted he went to the house high on drugs, specifically crack and alcohol. He was, quote, listening to the voices in his head and was out of control. When he walked up to the window, he saw Kennedy Brewer in bed next to his girlfriend. That was when the demons in his head told him to hurt the little girl. He reached through the window, grabbed her, and pulled her into the night. He then gave a very detailed and horrendous confession. At that point, they only had Johnson's confession for Kennedy Brewer's case, not for Levon's. And they were concerned because they didn't have DNA evidence for Levon's case at all. They couldn't prove that he was innocent, and they couldn't prove Johnson did it. So without his confession in that case, Levon would remain in prison serving a life sentence for a crime he didn't commit. The interrogator asked Justin Johnson about Levon Brooks's case, and at first he said he didn't do anything to that girl. He claimed there were no other times he committed a crime like that. But finally, they got him to confess. He gave them a full confession to both of the murders, which brought into question the legitimacy of bite mark evidence, because in both cases, that was the smoking gun for the prosecution. Justin Johnson was asked, "Did you bite either of those girls?" And he said no. He said he was very confused by the fact that the bite marks were such a big part of the cases. He even wondered to himself, after he disposed of the girls, did someone take them out of the water and bite them? At that point, they knew for sure that no one had ever bitten either one of them. So, indeed and without doubt, it was all made up. What's crazy is that even now, after everything that's come out, Michael West still says that he believes Levon Brooks and Kennedy Brewer bit these girls' arms. He even said, quote, "Did I say he killed her? No. Did I testify he raped her? No. Do I believe as a death investigator he played a significant part in her death? Yes. I have no doubt in that. You're a blithering idiot if you can't see the connection." This man, in my opinion, is delusional. And scarily enough, holds a lot of power in these cases. Because when he's asked to be an expert witness in a case like this, he's brought in to a jury who knows nothing about any of these methods or sciences or forensic analysis. And he comes in with a confidence unlike anyone's ever seen, saying that he knows for certain that what he's saying is true and right. He can be responsible for putting someone away and putting someone on death row. Innocent people. He has. Dozens of people are behind bars and even on death row because of his interpretation of bite marks. He's been called a dangerous, dangerous witness. And he wholeheartedly believes that what he is saying is right and true. It's just so crazy to me because those bite marks weren't even created by human teeth. They were created by crawfish. How can you get it so wrong? Dr. Suvaron even said these 19 bite marks he's claiming are all coming from the top part of the jaw, which wouldn't make any sense because you have to bite with both parts of your jaw in order to make a bite mark. But because Dr. West came in there and was so confident, he just was able to convince the jury. That's all he has to do. That's his job, is to convince a jury. And he's really good at that. And that's what makes him so dangerous. Bite mark analysis in general is seen as a very controversial type of evidence. In a commentary published in the May 2023 issue of the Journal of the California Dental Association, Mary Bush, a forensic dentist and associate professor of restorative dentistry at the University at Buffalo School of Dental Medicine, pointed out that 26 people have been wrongfully convicted primarily because of a bite mark found on a victim. At least three of the suspects ended up on death row. She said, quote, "In an actual bite mark case, a bruise, not indentations of teeth, is what is typically examined. A bruise may create further uncertainty, as it is diffuse and may not accurately reflect the tooth arrangements that created the wound. People assume that human dentition is unique because dental records are often used to identify the dead." But interestingly, Bush found that the teeth marks that fit best usually do not belong to the actual perpetrator. The point is, it's a very flawed science. There are moments when it's helpful, but it shouldn't be the sole piece of evidence in a case, and it also should be taken with a grain of salt because of how easily it can be misconstrued. By 2008, LaVon Brooks had been incarcerated for 18 years, and Kennedy Brewer, 15 years. They both missed big family moments and graduations. Kennedy's daughter was a baby when he was sent to prison, so he missed her growing up. Everyone who knew they didn't do it were heartbroken for so long. But finally, on February 15th, 2008, the loose ends were tied up. Justin Johnson had confessed and had been arrested, and it was agreed with the special prosecutor and judge that they'd have a joint hearing where both LaVon and Kennedy would be present. Noxubee County Courthouse was jam-packed that day. People were crammed inside, including the press. LaVon was so worried. He told his family not to bring his mother because he didn't know how it was going to go at first. He didn't believe it was over. But it was. Kennedy Brewer was told that he was free to go. And the room erupted in applause and cheers and prayers. He was not only off death row, but he was a free man. And he was back with his family. Next up was LaVon. The judge told him after reviewing all the documents, he was also free to go. He was a free man as well. And once again, the room erupted in applause and tears. LaVon was also back with his family. LaVon Brooks cried and hugged the lawyers on that day back in February 2008 when he was announced free to go at the Noxubee Courthouse. DA Forrest Allgood was there as well, and he was hurting, and rightfully so. Had an actual investigation been done in the first place, Christine Jackson might still be alive. LaVon Brooks and Kennedy Brewer would have gotten back almost two decades of their lives, and that's just time alone, not even mentioning the trauma they must have gone through, and their reputations and lives being destroyed because of this terrible work and basically witch hunt against them. But despite everything, LaVon and Kennedy forgave the errors that placed them in prison, which is very big of them. The people responsible for putting them in prison and doing terrible work, and basically setting up a witch hunt against them, did not deserve their forgiveness. But they got it. They probably just wanted to move on. And I hope that brought them peace. Their cases are landmark cases for the Innocence Project. They really didn't have any experience with bite mark cases before then. But they found that they weren't outliers. It was the whole profession of forensic odontology. And because of LaVon and Kennedy's cases, the Innocence Project focused in on bite mark cases and made them their priority and decided to fast-track any case they could find. Since then, they realized in almost half of their cases, forensic science was misapplied and misused in an initial conviction. This was a horrible, horrible case of misuse of forensic science, and these men deserve their lives back. But at least there's good that's come out of it. At least since then, the Innocence Project has been able to recognize that as a problem and hone in on those specific cases and help other people like them. Since his release from prison, LaVon Brooks enjoyed hunting, fishing, and raising chickens. His backyard was covered with chicken coops that housed a menagerie of birds. He shared many of the birds he raised with friends and relatives and encouraged everyone he knew to build their own chicken coops. In recent years, he often reflected on the twists and turns in his life, saying, "All those years I was locked up, I had lots of time to think about my situation, and this is more than I was even able to dream about at that point. But in the years since I have been out, I decided I could spend the rest of my life being bitter or spend it being a testament to God's blessings." Sadly, on January 24th, 2018, at the age of 58, LaVon Brooks died at his home after a long battle with colon cancer. Friends and relatives gathered to say goodbye to a remarkable man who had every reason to be filled with hate, but lived his days with nothing but love for everyone who crossed his path. His wife, Dina, said his health had declined in the recent months, but his death was still a shock. In the years since his release, LaVon helped spread the word of the work being done with the DNA technology, with appearances around the country arranged by the Innocence Project. His and Brewer's stories were the subject of a documentary film that premiered in 2010 at Ole Miss, and two upcoming book projects, The Cadaver King by Innocence Project lawyer Tucker Carrington, who is based at Ole Miss. The book focuses on the flawed testimony of Michael West, who testified about the bite mark evidence at the trials of both Brooks and Brewer. After his exoneration, the Innocence Project commissioned award-winning photographer Isabel Armand in 2020 to document Kennedy Brewer's life. And at that time, Kennedy Brewer talked about spending time at the local hangout, the car wash, in his rural hometown of Brooksville, Mississippi. He's surrounded by his large, close-knit family, with whom he has a deep and emotional connection. He has 10 brothers and 5 sisters who he sees every day, and he works at a fish farm. But he also spoke candidly about all that will never be regained, most notably the years of lost time with his son and daughter, who were just babies when he was sent to death row, reflecting on the personal hardships he's experienced as he's endeavored to rebuild his life post-exoneration, and also questions why there isn't greater accountability for the prosecutors and supposed expert witnesses, such as those in his case, who misled juries to wrongfully convict innocent people. And I think that's a good question. But that is the case of LaVon Brooks and Kennedy Brewer. It is so sad that LaVon Brooks is no longer with us. He sounds like he was a lovely man and was living out his years after prison in such a nice way, with his family and friends around him just raising chickens. This is just such a heartbreaking case, and it makes me so mad. It is so unfair what happened to these men. They will never get those years back. And there's so much to this. I understand the extreme desire to find the person responsible for doing such heinous things to children, because it's such an emotional thing. I understand that desire, but I don't understand not leaving every stone unturned and basically just focusing in on the first people that you think slightly fit the bill, because it's highly emotional. It's extremely high stakes. And also, there's, in my opinion, there's that underlying racism in there as well, because even after the DNA evidence comes out proving that Kennedy is not the person who did this, Forrest Allgood is still saying that he's convinced that Kennedy had something to do with it and saying that he probably sold the child for drugs. That feels racially charged to me. It was just a massive part of this case. So it's heartbreaking. This whole case is heartbreaking. I'm so unbelievably glad that these men got out of prison, but it took them almost 2 decades to get there. But thank goodness for the Innocence Project for doing the amazing work that they do. They've helped free somewhere around 300 people through their work, including those exonerated by DNA and other evidence, representing hundreds of years collectively served in prison. That's incredible. But this shoddy forensic work is to blame. It's terrifying. But if you're interested in their work, I highly recommend you check them out. I hope Kennedy Brewer finds peace and continues to live the rest of his life with his family and is happy because he's lived through enough. But I think that's all I have to say about that for now. Why don't we move on to a bit of a palate cleanser so we can go on with our days as normal, and I will tell you my good thing. My good thing is that I am merely rows away from finishing the hat that I am knitting for Alex. I am very excited because I've been knitting this beanie for a while. I don't get a ton of knitting time. I've been pretty busy, so I'm ready for this beanie to be done. And it's looking pretty good, although I will say I messed up 2 stitches, and I'm trying to let it go because it's only 2 stitches, and in the grand scheme of this beanie, you probably won't realize if you're not really looking for it or if you're not me, but I definitely know. I was furiously knitting while we were watching a TV show the other night because it was a stressful part of the TV show that we were watching, and I purl to where I should have knit to. For anyone who knows anything about knitting, I did the wrong stitch twice, basically, is what I'm saying. And I didn't realize until it was already too late. It's fine at the end of the day. It's not a big deal. The only issue is I'm basically 1 knitting session away from being done with this hat, and the rest of this hat is literally perfect. So I was under the impression that one of my first knitting projects was going to be perfect. And as someone who loves doing things perfect, that was going to feel really good to me. But I'm ranting about something that literally does not matter. It's totally fine. I'm excited to be done with this beanie and it's going to be great. And I'm going to keep Alex's head warm, which is ultimately a good thing. But anyway, I hope you all have a very happy holiday. Spend it with your family and friends and stay warm. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out all the bonus episodes we have over on Patreon, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listener's episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram @nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast with a T in the name. Podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing. Yeah.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS. QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.